earlier time that you started sending people up for a time, you know, months at a time, and then you would bring them back either on the space shuttle or on a Soyuz spacecraft. So, but in the 80s, yeah, you would send them up for, you know, a week or so. They had, was it a space lab or a space hab on the, in the back of the cargo bay. So you could float through a tunnel from the, you know, from where you were in the cockpit, you know, fly, you know, float through a tunnel and you wind up in the cargo bay and you have this big module back there. You would spend your time there doing research. That went on quite a few space lab flights back here.
N2XJN, K2LIW, go ahead, Wes. I was pretty sure I heard Wes wanted to make a further comment. Anyone else have any further questions for Paul? Give me your call letters right now, K2LIW.
Funny, Dick, when Wes said 14, I'm trying to think how many per square meter. 1,400. You always said 1,300. That threw me when he said 1,400.
Yeah, I've heard numbers as low as 1,250 to as high as 1,375 or something like that. It's a function of when you make the measurement. Are you including ultraviolet, infrared, or just the visual, and so on? Does your, if you try to look at the raw power going into a solar voltaic, somewhere around 1,300 watts per square meter is the solar flux at the Earth distance from the sun. And since the sun is an isotropic radiator, it radiates the same amount of signal all directions in space, and you know exactly how far we are away, 93 million miles, and you draw yourself a sphere with a 93 million mile radius, you therefore can figure out the total area out where we are, 1,400 watts per square meter, and you figure that all out, and you realize the sun is turning out 10 to the 27 watts total, and in its lifetime it's going to turn out 10 to the 44 joules, so we can quantify how much energy is coming out of the sun. And it's a biggie. And so that that Parker Solar probe is going to have to put up with stuff. I mean, think now, at that distance, we can calculate how many watts per square meter is the solar flux where the Parker probe is going to be. Let me drop this. And you said that electronics is going to be air-conditioned. Well, it's going to have a shield that's aimed toward the sun, that's hopefully highly reflective, and it can tolerate very big temperatures. But if you're going to run an air conditioning equipment to make sure your electronics doesn't get overheated, what do you use as a heat sink? I mean, the air conditioner you install in the window of your house, for instance, the coils inside the house, the condenser coils that get cold, that's the evaporator coil, and the condenser coil outside gets hot, and you blow air across the air outside. See, your heat sink is the outside air. On the spacecraft that's 4 million miles from the sun, everything in that vicinity is hot. So what do you use as a heat sink to run your air conditioner? Did they really say they're going to run an air conditioner, Paul? WS2N, K2LIW?
Yeah, I read this a couple of months ago. They did say they're going to have some kind of refrigeration system. And you have two different ways of operating the solar panels. You know, on the way there, they're not worried about it as much. But when you get close to the sun, you're still going to need power. So for a time, you're going to have solar panels facing the sun. You can't just block it with this carbon shield. So at that time, they're going to have some kind of fluids. I don't know yet. You know, I'm sure the details will all come out as time goes on. But some kind of fluids to keep the solar panels from melting. So that's the, you know, at that distance, you know, we're at, what, 1,300 watts per meter here. I guess inverse square law, you can figure out what that would be at 4 million. Just, you know, I think it's going to be 3.8 or 3.9 million miles from the surface. So, how much of a change is that? Well, you're good at that thing. But, you know, it gives you an idea how hot this is going to be. What kind of refrigeration system you got on this thing? Back to you there.
Yeah, there's an inverse square law. So when you go from 93 million miles down to 4 million miles, you take that ratio and square it, which I'm doing right now. Yeah, you get a multiplication of 540 times. 540 times 1,300 watts per square meter. You end up with 0.7 million watts per square meter. It's huge. I'm going to have to double check. Well, the error I made is that the 4 million miles is from the surface of the sun. To really do it accurately, you got to do all these calculations from the center of the sun versus the center of the earth. So the ratio is not going to be that big, but still it's huge. Let me drop
it. It could still be like a million watts, though. It's way up there.
I think it's going to be more like 50,000 watts per square meter. I'll do that again a little bit later on. It can't be as high as a million. You couldn't tolerate that. Now, the problem of cooling off the Barker space probe, where everything in your vicinity gets hot, is not too different from what happens on the SR-71 airplane. Because it's moving at 3 times the speed of sound, every bit of air it can touch is at some ridiculous temperature, like 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Let me drop. So you would be cooking the pilot in that aircraft real fast. I think the number calculated, the cockpit would be running 450 degrees Fahrenheit if they weren't running air conditioning. And the air conditioning has got to use something as a heat sink. And everything you can touch when you're flying that fast is hot. So there is no heat sink. The only heat sink they could find is the fuel. The fuel is in the tank. They make sure it's nice and cold before they fuel the aircraft. And they use the fuel itself as a heat sink. And they're almost boiling the fuel by using it as a heat sink. That portion of the fuel that they pick up that first runs the condenser coil and then goes straight into the engine after that. If they run out of fuel, they run out of heat sink. They run out of power at the same time, but still, if they ever ran out of fuel, I think you would be cooking the pilot. So, temporarily, they can use the fuel. Well, you can't do that with the Parker. So, where is the heat sink for the air conditioner in Parker? That's a tough one. WS2N, K2RIW.
I'm imagining it's going to be behind this carbon shield. You know, I mean, it's still going to have a dark side temporarily, anyway. You know, as long as that spacecraft doesn't, you know, change its orientation. That's the other thing. You're going to have an antenna pointing back to Earth. And I believe it was going to be some kind of an elliptical orbit, you know, where it's not going to stay there forever. And it's not a suicide mission. It's not just going to go, you know, head for the sun and that's it. It's supposed to go in orbit. I still haven't found many details on the orbit yet. There's a lot to find on this. We'll get more as time goes on. Back to you, Dick. This is WS1.
Yeah, believe it or not, getting the spacecraft to the near area of the sun represents a lot of fuel expenditure. Because under normal circumstances, you fly a trajectory from Earth toward the sun. You're going toward a gravity field, you're going to speed up real fast, and you're going to end up going too fast. So they have to make a couple of flybys of Venus in order to slow down. You can use the gravity assist of another planet. If you fly on the outside of the planet, you get a speed increase. If you fly on the inside edge of the planet, you get a speed decrease. So I think they're going to make two pairs. the inside edge of Venus, the side that faces the sun, and know it to be able to dissipate energy. And so at least two passes of Venus, for all we know, even a pass of Mercury, and know it to be able to slow down. I wonder if you've seen some of those details for WS2N, KQRIW?
Yes, I know they're going to do a gravity assist with Venus, at least one, that I did read a while back. But yeah, to get a lot of power to do this, that's why it's a relatively small spacecraft, but they're going to be using the Delta IV Heavy, like I mentioned earlier. It's really three Delta IV engines, rockets, both together. So, you know, it's the same one that launched the Orion spacecraft 3,000 miles off the Earth. That Delta setup. So, that's the most powerful thing that we have. You know, the Atlas V is very powerful. The Delta IV itself is very powerful. You know, more than the Atlas V. But then you put three Delta IVs together. That's a very powerful vehicle. So, they run on all three stages. They're running liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, similar to what the same thing as what the shuttle ran. And they're running R-68 engines. They're throwaway engines, they have this ablative material on the inside of the cone to keep it cool as it goes up. That's why it's got a yellow flame to it instead of that clear flame that the shuttle has. Very powerful rocket. So, and it's a small spacecraft. So like you said, that you need a lot of power to do what they're going to be doing with this thing. Back to you.
What is the predicted date when the Parker Solar Probe will be on station and operational? What's the predicted date for that, Paul? Go ahead.
It's going to be launched in, I think, summer of July of next year. So sometimes it takes a couple of years before you get that far in. You know, it took quite a few years for the one that went in orbit around Mercury, Messenger. Quite a few years to do that, so I wouldn't be talking about a couple of years. I haven't read the predicted date yet. Back to you.
So it sounds like the spacecraft is developed, mostly built, and going to be launched a year and a half from now. So it's going to take a couple of years to get on station to do all these flybys of Venus and whatever. I think it's at least two flybys of Venus to dissipate energy. One of the things that's hard to believe is that if you draw a real scale diagram of the sun and the planets, and you make the real distances and the real diameters scale, you realize there's some tremendous distances between the planets and the sun, and between the planets and each other. As soon as you leave the vicinity of Earth, and you think you're on the flight toward Mars or Jupiter or Saturn, as soon as you get more than a few thousand miles away from the Earth, it's no longer a Earth probe, an Earth spacecraft. It is an object in some kind of a crazy orbit around the sun. Once you leave the Earth, the only real gravity field that spacecraft feels is that sun. Voyager out there, two or three times the distance beyond Pluto. Is that in free space? Yes, but it really is an object in some kind of a crazy orbit, so to speak, around the sun. When it looks back toward Earth and measures gravity fields, 99.9% of the gravity it senses is not from the planet, it's from the sun. So all of these crazy maneuvers are trying to create some kind of an elliptical orbit at some amount of remaining energy. And so it's...
Repeater, time out.
So I think you're saying that the the Parker solar probe will be in some kind of an elliptical orbit where the perigee, so to speak, but it's not perigee, perihelion, is going to be 4 million miles from the surface of the Sun. And since the Sun has a radius of 450,000 miles, so 450,000 plus 4 million, call it 4.5 million. 4.5 million miles from the center of the Sun, that's going to be the perihelion, and the aphelion is going to be some greater number. And will it have enough rocket power on board to circularize that orbit? And maybe that's not what they want to do. But let's see. Mercury goes around the Sun in 88 days. This thing is going to be inside of the orbit of Mercury. So it's going to probably have a orbital period of something like 40 or 50 days. Do you remember reading how many days it takes to make one orbit around the Sun on that crazy trajectory? WS2N, K2IW.
No, I haven't read anything about the orbit. I seem to remember there's another solar mission, so I'm getting confused between the two. But I believe this one's going to be elliptical. I'll have to find out. But it's definitely going to be in tight. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the thing popped out 30 or 40 days. It will be going 100,000 miles an hour plus. And it's not the fastest one that we've ever done. There's we had a Helios spacecraft that did something like this. Didn't go anywhere near this close. But I think it got up to 160,000 miles an hour or something. Fastest moving object relative to something. In this case, it was relative to the Sun. Just like the Juno going around Jupiter. They say that goes, I think it's 120,000 miles an hour around Jupiter. You know, so, you know, it's relative to Jupiter. So, interesting statistics, but it's real. I mean, you know, if you were on Jupiter, it would be passing you at 120,000 miles an hour. So, yeah, I don't have any further information on that thing. I'm going to probably leave a little early. What time is it? 11:30. I've run out of material. Let me drop it.
We could start signing off at this time, Paul, go ahead.
Okay, that's fine with me. We'll be back next week. And not this Monday. I always listen to Newsline on the Limelight machine. I know it comes out on Friday. Get it on a computer and all, but I always listen to Limelight. It actually sounds better on over the radio. Newsline has been around forever. And not this, well, I'm going to try this Monday, but either this Monday, most likely next Monday, possibly they'll be mentioning Ron Cockermer on that Newsline. Hoping for that. Information was submitted, so we'll see. That would be pretty cool to mention St. Joseph's School here, my town. Back to you, Dick. This is WS2N, the base portion of the TechNet.
Okay, and that was TechNet number 253. That was Space Report number 253. This was TechNet number 1653. I said 52 before, it's 53. 73, you all. Be kind to each other. We'll be next week, back next week. Write down your questions so that you can remember them. And with this smart group that usually gathers, most of the time we get some kind of an answer. Bye-bye, you all. K2IW clear.
73, we'll be back next week. WS20.
Stay with you guys. Thanks for doing that. KTUPS Mobile.
Where are you located now, Rich? And I think you're heading up east. Is that true?
I was just about to ask him the same question. WS, I'm listening, but out.
Yeah, I'm still heading east. I'm in PA on the Pennsylvania Turnpike near Somerset, Pennsylvania. familiar where that is, but that's where I'd be at the moment.
And by the way, Paul, I just did that calculation. It's very close to 500,000 watts per square meter to get out of the sun at 4 million miles from the surface. What's your guess, Rich? You'll be on Long Island tonight at 6 o'clock in the morning?
About that, maybe sometime a little after 5, we should be in Melville, then Farmingville, and then back in Queens. So, and I got a whole very long honeydew list to do tomorrow, but I didn't get it from my wife. I actually got it from my son. He's turning 21 this week, and he's got a bunch of friends coming over to spend a few days. So he's trying to spruce up and clean up a whole bunch of stuff around the house. So on my quote-unquote day off tomorrow, I think I'm going to be very busy.
He's having a big celebration because he's turning 21. I presume there's a graduation involved here somewhere. And nowadays, when does a person consider themselves adult? Do they consider themselves adult at age 21? Over to you, Rich.
I don't know when people consider themselves to be an adult nowadays, but I think it's when other people consider them to be an adult. It really depends on the individual. I mean, I've seen some 15 and 16-year-old kids that were extremely mature, and I think some 25-year-olds that act like 8-year-olds. I don't know. There's no graduation yet. He just finished up his junior year in college. So he goes back in the fall for a senior year up at Boston University. And then hopefully on to law school.
Now, if this was a gathering of girls, it might be called a pajama party if they're going to stay over for a day or two. But guys don't have that. What do guys call their official gathering of a few of their buddies? Over to you, Rich, KQRIW.
That's a good question. I don't know if they actually have a name for it, but there is going to be both girls and guys coming to this and spending that Friday night and Saturday night. So it's going to be a couple-day bash, I suppose. And he's already lining up the menu of stuff for me to cook for him on Friday and Saturday. That's all good stuff. He's a really good kid. I couldn't be more proud of him. So. With my older daughter moved out of the house, the girls that are spending the night bunking in her old room, and the guys, I think, are going to crash on the sofa in the living room. Of course, they're going to have to share that with the dogs, but that's part of the plan anyway.
Just wait till those guys find out a beagle. I think it's a beagle-like dog. At least it looked like that to me. I think you've got to... Even two or three of them, licking them in the face in the morning. That could be exciting. Now, when modern-day youngsters get together, I think the two most important things are food and music. So, do you have a pretty extensive hi-fi system in the house, Rich, go ahead.
I don't know if it's music so much anymore. Food, definitely. Food and drinks and snacks and you know, regular meals as well. That's important. Video games are important. Sports on television is important. But not so much music. It's not like they're going to get together and be dancing or anything. So, it's different than it was when I grew up, that's for sure. So... but he's looking forward to it. He's been waiting for this for a long time. He's even going to the DMV tomorrow to have the new photograph taken for his license. I don't know how quick he'll get the new one, but the new one will no longer be embossed with big red letters across it that says under 21.
Yeah, I didn't know that they do that on a license, red letters under 21. And does that mean when a policeman picks you up for some kind of an infraction, That under 21 makes a difference to him, to the policeman? And when it comes to video games, Let's see. I'm guessing you've got a satellite, a cable TV system, which probably has 200 channels, and you probably have a display screen on the family television set that's 60 inches wide. Is that approximately it, Rich? K2UPS, K2RIW.
K2UPS. Well, that's pretty close. There's probably at least 200 channels. We have Verizon Fios, the full package. And the TV's probably close to 60 inches, 50-something at least, I would say. He's got a couple different gaming systems, like a PS4, and also they have the Wii. The graphics on the PS4 are absolutely incredible. He plays this basketball game, and you almost swear you're watching a real basketball game. They're that good. You never really get too much into any of the military games, you know, shoot 'em up or snipers and stuff like that. But I've seen some of those, and they're extremely realistic looking. Not like Pong or some of the early ones that I played with when I was younger.
And to we go, Dick. Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
I think you fellows touched on cable TV. You know, I'm getting very upset because I got a bill here today, past due. It's almost $500. I'm not paying it. They can only send a collection agency, which I don't care. I don't think it's worth the money. And I wonder what you guys know, but I'm not a TV viewer at all. But Patty loves the movies. I'm thinking not only putting up an antenna, but getting her Netflix. What do you guys think?
If members of your household are used to pay-per-view movies, modern-day movies, that's where I think the cost is coming from, over-the-air reception will make them fairly unhappy. That kind of material is not free on the air. Free on the air, you've got a lot of PBS programming, and to a person who likes pay-per-view movies, that's way too tame. So that may not be a good solution to keep those people in the house happy, Rich. N2EO, K2RIW.
Okay, I wonder what you, maybe you two, Rich, know about Netflix. I had it a long, long time ago in Whitestone, Queens. I might buy her Netflix. It's very inexpensive. Rich, do you know?
How you doing, Rich? Okay, GPS Mobile. Well, my kids do a lot of Netflix, but that $500 a month, that's insane. They must be watching, like, several pay-per-view movies a day. And that's ridiculous. I mean, if you have to foot the bill for that, that's just insane. I mean, definitely go to one of the online viewings or something like that. But you could easily find out why the bill is that high. If that is just 1 month, maybe it's 2 months rolled in, I don't know. But it should not be that high for normal TV viewing. I said, if you got people that have to see the latest movies as soon as they come out and they're charging them $7, $8, $10, whatever, to watch, that's going to rack up that cost pretty expensively. But there are several different things out there. There's the Chrome TV, there's the Fire Stick, I think, through Amazon, there's Netflix, there's Hulu. There's a bunch of different online ones. Now, you may not get the latest movies as quick as they come out, but I guess other than that, go rent. Well, you can't even really rent DVDs anymore. Blockbuster's out of business. But I wouldn't pay that much, Rich.
Look, I love her very much. If I could continue it, I would. But you know, I have a $1,700 tax bill. The money would be better spent on that. Dick.
I think you've asked me a question, Rich, but I don't understand what the question is. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I think you're getting tired. What I said is I have a $1,700 tax bill every quarter. I think the money I'm spending on cable TV for her would be better spent paying the tax bill.
Okay, it sounds like your taxes are something like $7,000 a year, and property tax, that's a nice number. I think I'm paying something like $13,000 a year, Rich. You wouldn't want to pay my taxes.
I'm getting the senior discount and enhanced store. That's why I came down for the lawyer to waive my taxes down, whatever could be done. But I want to lower expenses around here. I'm inundated with so many bills. And when I spoke to Jeremy about the TV refuses, he said to me that the little boy here, you know, our grandson, likes Nickelodeon. He likes the sports and she likes the movie. You want to pick it up, Rich?
There are three guys on this machine right now, all named Rich.
You're right, Dick. We call you Dick, but it's Rich. Yes. You know, the problem with Netflix, unless you know a way to do it, Dick, she has a 70-inch TV up there. Netflix comes over a computer. Is there any way to convert that to go into a digital TV? I'm sure these days it's any Netflix somehow digitally.
I don't know. Let's see if KTUPS knows anything about that. Over to the other Rich.
A 70-inch TV, I don't think a very new one, which means it's most likely a smart TV, and you can literally plug a Cat 5 cable coming out of your router in your house directly into the TV and go through the Netflix. There's no reason. You don't have to convert anything into digital. You just plug your internet connection directly into the TV, or you can set it up through Wi-Fi probably as well. Most of the TVs have the Wi-Fi built in, and you can tell the TV then to access your router in the house and stream the video that way. But, you know, I know many people have told you this before, Rich, you don't like hearing it, but you got to put your foot down. You can't complain about the bills and yet allow people to keep walking all over you. A $500 cable bill is insane for someone in your position. You and only you have the power to change that, and that's what you need to do.
Oh, I realize that. Now it's come down to it, I'm going to have to. I didn't know what a smart TV was, but it probably is what it got a year. RJ-45, Rich?
Yeah, usually, or else just the coax that the cable is connecting to the TV. Same thing. But, I mean, you can throttle back the amount of service you have. You can still get all your basic channels. You can still get a couple of the kiddie channels for the little guy. And other than that, you know, people got to start ponying up if they want to watch. That's what I would tell you.
I agree with you. It's insane. But, okay. See, I can't get up there to see that set. You know my situation. I'm a double amputee. All you take all IW.
I'm
going
to have to leave you guys. So 73, you all. Bye-bye for now. K2IW clear. And K2UPS. You've got the baton.
Okay, Big 73. I did get your email, by the way, that you forwarded to me about the build of the denied connectors and that sort of stuff. That was pretty interesting. Both what you wrote and the response you got. So, but I appreciate you sending that along. But you have a good evening, and I will catch you again. K2UPS Mobile. Rich, N2EL.
Yeah, I'm going to say a couple more words on that one. It turns out the real insertion log of a PL-259 and SO-239 is essentially 0 dB of loss. Because it is approximately a 30 ohm connector, it creates some standing wave ratio. Standing wave ratio means it creates a reflected signal. If you're willing to put a tuning device near that connector, even the reflection goes away. So this inexpensive 60-year-old connector called PL-259, everybody says all kinds of bad words about it. It really is a very low-loss connector, very inexpensive, and if you're smart enough to know how to use it, except for weatherproofing, it can do everything you want. So even though a lot of people like to say bad things about it, it's been around for 60 years. Back to you, Rich. K2UPS, K2RIW. There's a reason for that.
And they do work well. I've never had issues with them other than water egress when I didn't weatherproof it properly. But, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. There's a lot of old wives' tales out there. People believe everything in a textbook, which is not necessarily true.
Okay. What specifically do you think they're believing that's in error? Back to you, Rich.
That it's only good for HF. You shouldn't even use them on 2 meters, or God forbid, use them on 440. You know, you'll have no power reaching your antenna type of stuff. And I tell them about you and how you would run the kilowatt or full power through these things and key down, and they wouldn't heat up. So if they're so lossy, they should be getting so hot you can't even touch them. But there's no heat, so there's no negligible loss. I said maybe with some scientific equipment you might be able to measure a small amount, but it certainly isn't going to make any bit of difference to your typical ham station.
K6DP, I just came in. What are you talking about? I was just listening.
Yeah, when you put a pair of 239 and a 238 together as a UHF splice in the middle of the cable, the Vizwar creates at 432. Creates an apparent loss of 0.37 dB, but that's not a real loss. That's reflective power back toward the source. And if you're willing to put in a tuning device, and I'm working on the details now of that tuning device, you can even make the 0.37 disappear. But you've got a good memory, Rich. I put key down 700 watts through a PL-259 and SO-239 for 10 solid minutes. It got mildly warm to the touch, which represents less than 1 watt of loss out of 700 watts on 432. That ain't no real loss. And you got a good memory. K2UPS, K2RIW.
I would say it's negligible, Dick.
That's what I figured. It really doesn't make that much difference to a typical person, but guys get all hung up on end connectors and, you know, 2 meters, 440, you gotta use end connectors. Like, no, you don't. Not to mention that most typical hams have a hard enough time properly soldering a PL-259, never mind properly installing an end connector. So, you know, taking that into account, PL-259 still has an edge over the end connector for your typical ham. Some guys get really good at putting them on, but most of them have no clue what would be involved in putting an net on.
And connectors good for outside, mainly to give a weather type seal. Other than that, PL-59s are good enough for ham applications. K6DPC, work clear before it gets kicked off.
Yeah, I think almost every piece of ham equipment we can buy, even on 2 meters and probably on 450, the output connector in the back panel is an SO239. It works like a charm. They probably, if you're putting high power through one, if you're putting in brief pulses, I'm pretty sure it would not arc over until you hit 40 kilowatts. Believe it or not, a type N connector with brief pulses will not arc over until you hit 20 kilowatts. And they can't take 20 kilowatts of CW power. As you approach a kilowatt on a type N connector, the current flowing through the center pin does create some extra heating of that center pin. And that's the mode of failure. Okay, as I said before, I gotta go away. Bye bye for now. We ain't gonna solve all these connector problems tonight. Keep your RIW clear.
For your side, they use DNC connectors on aircraft transponders that are pulse power, and there's no problem. You're going to need a 5, would you? You're going to need a 5, Richie. K6DPC clear.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL Repeater.
Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Thank you.
1230 W2VL repeater system.
Thank you. Thank you. 5-2 Sip-Dex, 5-2 Sip-Dex, 6 David Peters Egress.